Imagine moving to America and starting a new life with your family. Nice home, better schools, new friends. But just when you begin to thrive, the secret you've been hiding suddenly gets out. And you find yourself thrown out on the streets, alone. This is Dream City, a podcast series from Feet in Two Worlds. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez. 4 years ago, journalist Von Diaz documented the lives of a very vulnerable community of young people in New York City. They are recent immigrants, gay, and homeless because of it. That was Adriel Grant's situation when Von met him in 2011, and he's part of a radio piece Von produced for PRI's The World that year. In this episode of Dream City, we're going to listen to that story, and then we'll catch up with Von and Adriel, who also goes by the name Leroy, and we'll discuss what's happened to them both since the story aired. Adriel Grant recalls the day his mother kicked him out.
She told me I have to leave her house because, so you can't leave in this house because I don't want no gays. And she said she kissed on her mother's grave that if she knew I was going to be gay.
Adriel is a 20-year-old immigrant from Guyana. For the past year, he's been living on the street and in temporary housing. We spoke in his bedroom at Green Chimneys, a program that provides housing and services for homeless youth. He moved to the U.S. 5 years ago with his sister. They initially lived in Atlanta with an aunt. A year ago, Adriel moved to New York to be with his mother. He was there only 2 weeks when his mother learned he was gay. A cousin in Atlanta revealed his secret. Adriel's mother confronted him in the street, shouting painful insults at him in public.
If she knew I was going to be gay, she would have gotten an abortion on me. So she told me to get out, and she would never forgive me for being gay.
And if he had stayed in Guyana, she probably never would have found out. Adriel says he'd known for years that he was gay, but he never told anyone until he came to the U.S. Back in Guyana, his family often made violently homophobic comments. Adriel says he would never have come out if he had stayed there.
It would have been very dangerous for me to do that. Especially the time like we're in right now in my country, there's a lot of violence going on and stuff. And then to hear that I'm gay too, so it's been crazy.
When he moved to Atlanta and started high school, he met other gay teens of Caribbean descent, and he began to feel more comfortable being open about who he was. And that's typical for gay immigrant youth, says Carmen Quinones, program director at Green Chimneys.
They were raised and taught that it was so taboo to be out and to be themselves or to feel that. Here in the States, they are able to express it or show it, and yet at home, they're rejected for it, or in their country. And so here they are trying to navigate that and the feelings behind all that.
But their parents often feel unprepared and overwhelmed, says Quinones. That was the experience for one Mexican couple. They agreed to share their story if I didn't use their names. Last November, their 19-year-old son came out to them.
Fue un domingo, llegamos a la iglesia.
It was a Sunday. We came home from church, and our daughters told us, sit down, we want to talk to you.
They said, yes, he is gay.
The mother says, to her, it was the end of the world.
After they told us, I said, let's move away from here, where no one will know us. We'll sell the houses and we'll leave.
The mother says in her native Jalisco, people are not openly gay. It's never discussed. Although the couple was devastated by their son's revelation, they didn't throw him out, like Adriel's mother. They just never talked about it. Then, 4 months later, their son became very ill. He was diagnosed with meningitis and fell into a coma. When his condition didn't improve, the mother says she finally revealed to the doctors that her son was gay.
Yo les dije que le hicieran todo tipo de análisis.
I asked them to test him for HIV.
Mi hijo es positivo.
And my son is positive at age 19.
Their son came out of the coma 4 days later, and his health has been steadily improving. These parents say since that time, they've come to terms with their son's sexuality.
Bueno, para mí fue muy fuerte.
The father said, well, for me, it was very, very strong, because he is my only son, the only son that God gave me. And so with him ends my name. I don't applaud my son, but I also don't punish him because God made him the way he is. But the couple still isn't ready to tell the family back home. For The World, I'm Von Diaz in New York.
This is Jocelyn Gonzalez, and I'm here talking to Von Diaz, who's the reporter of the piece that you just heard. And with us is the young man whose story you heard at the beginning of the story, Leroy Grant, who used to go by the name Adriel Grant. I want to ask you, Von and Leroy, what is it like for you hearing that story now, and what stands out to you about it?
It brings back memories.
Yeah, what does it bring back for you?
Just like the whole process of me being kicked out, me being homeless, and my mother and I, like, accepting me. And it also bring up the fact that we haven't, like, deal with the process as yet, but we just don't talk about it.
And Von, for you, having told this story and brought this to the public, what do you hear in it now, a couple years later?
It actually made me really, really emotional. I think a lot of times you don't revisit your work. You know, you just keep moving, you make things and you move on, you make something else. And I was also kind of reliving, Leroy, the experience of meeting you. It made me remember so clearly that that evening in your bedroom. I remember I sat on your bed next to you, and I think you had a bunch of Beyonce posters on the wall. And at that point, we had met a couple of times. I remember just feeling so kind of nervous, but also so grateful to you for sharing these really intense moments in your life. I certainly didn't have the experiences that you had, but having spent all this time with you and listening to you tell these stories in these very intimate settings really brought back a lot of memories for me too.
I'm curious, Leroy, you were in a really vulnerable position at that time in your life. And when Von started doing this story, was there ever any question in your mind or a concern about sharing your experience? Like, was it hard to trust her?
I did trust her about sharing my story. I was super nervous when I was telling my story. I don't know why. And knowing that someone like wanted to hear what my story was kind of big, because you really don't get that much people interested in your story and where you come from and stuff like that. So it was very different.
If you don't mind me asking, why did you feel that you could trust me?
You created a space where it was safe for me to express myself and, like, just be who I am and just talk from the heart. And I got that feeling from you that be like, okay, this is a safe space. I could let loose and tell my stories.
I'm really glad you felt that way.
Hey, Von, you interviewed several people for this story, and was there something specific that drew you to Leroy and made you want to make him part of this particular piece? Was there something about his situation that resonated with you?
Absolutely. Leroy, I'm not sure that you know this, but in the time before I met you, ultimately, I had been spending a lot of time in shelters. I had been hanging out at Sylvia's place two or three nights a week. I had gone to shelters out in Queens, doing exactly what you described, trying to make a space for someone to feel comfortable telling me their story. And your experiences really stood out to me partly because of the way that you told me the story, partly because of how significant this shift had been in your life. Your sense of courage really stood out to me. And I mentioned this to you at the time, but you had lived in Atlanta and I lived in Atlanta. and I remember at the time being like, holy crap, like, that's my hometown. What are other, you know, what's going on with kids in my hometown that are now here? I just felt all these layers of connection. You also just were so forthcoming with me. You shared a lot, and you let me, you invited me to that Valentine's party at Green Chimneys, do you remember?
Yes.
where you did, again, theme Beyonce karaoke, if I'm remembering correctly. You invited me into your home. You let me sit on your bed. You introduced me to your friends. You know, I felt like it was a real exchange.
Have you guys stayed in touch since then?
Yes. I emailed Von a few times after we had finished the interview, and then we bumped into each other at an event that I was doing the tabling for another organization. So I was surprised when I saw her. I was like, oh my God, it's
I remember so clearly when I got that email from you. It was after the piece had come out, and I remember jumping up and telling my partner, I was like, babe, Leroy emailed me. He's doing well. similar feeling when I saw you at this event. I mean, you looked fabulous. I can't remember exactly what you were wearing, but you looked amazing. I remember your hair was very tall. It was taller than the last time I had seen you. It was so good to see you doing so well and to be so involved in all the work that you do.
Well, can we talk about that a little bit? Leroy, what happened after that story aired?
So after the story aired, I started getting calls from people from my country saying that they saw my piece in the newspaper and stuff like that. So I was like, oh my God.
What was that like?
It was nerve-wracking. And then I was like, okay, they're going to find out anytime soon because social media is there. And then I also have a Facebook. So, and people from back home add me to the page. So they're going to see my life being played out in front of them anyway. So I didn't take it any kind of way.
Did you ever feel unsafe because of that?
No, I never felt unsafe. I was secure. I was like always with my friends. So nothing. I do want to go back home to my country because my father is there, my sister is there, and my niece and my nephew that I never saw. So I want to go back home, but I still have that in the back of my head, like, oh, if I go back home, what's going to happen? Because it's very dangerous for LGBTQ people back in my country. So even though right now there's this organization, I don't want to say it wrong, but it's SASOD. And they're working on getting rights for LGBTQ people over there. But
in Guyana.
Yes, mm-hmm. I'm still on the fence, but I do want to go back.
So what happened next?
Well, someone called my mother and told her about it. And she told my sister, and then my sister told me. And I was like, okay. I asked her what my mom was saying. So then she was like, she didn't say anything. So I don't know what was going through her head or anything like that. So.
Well, can I ask about your mother? Because, I mean, how did you feel about her at the time when you guys were recording the interview? And these years later, have you found a new relationship with her, or do you still not speak?
At the time we were doing the interview, I really didn't care about what she thought about me and my lifestyle. So I was just like, let me move on, because if I'm just stuck there thinking about what could have been and what could be and stuff like that, then I'm not going to get anything accomplished and just going to be focused on that. So I just put that in the back burner. It's like when the time comes, it's just going to come. And we recently started back talking, like communicated, but we still haven't discussed anything about my sexuality and stuff like that. But we're going to have to do it sometime because I'm about to get married and I want her to come to my wedding. It was like,
you're about to get married?
You're getting married.
In the future.
Oh, got it.
Oh, in the
I was going to say Leroy.
This is one way to find out, right, Vaughn?
So has she ever apologized to you?
No, and I don't think I would ever get an apology from my mother.
What is that like?
I don't think I need an apology from her. I just want her to be able to like accept me for who I am. I think that's what I need. And then I'll be okay. Just for her to accept it. I don't need her to apologize for kicking me out and stuff like that. Just accepting me for who I am and then it'll be okay.
Vaughn told me that you are studying social work. Is that right?
Yes.
I'm wondering if going through the experience of having been turned out of your home and staying at Green Chimneys, did that sort of spur your decision to study social work and maybe become a social worker yourself?
Yes, I think that had like a big part of me joining the field of social work, because my first major was I wanted to become a mathematics professor or become a politician. So that's still down the line.
Oh. That's quite a combination.
So yeah, it definitely had a big impact on me trying to give back to the community that gave to me, that helped me get to the point that I am right now. So
was there a specific moment that you can remember where you were like, I want to do this work now?
I guess it was when they started like cutting budget for the homeless LGBTQ shelters in the city, and it went from like 250 to like 150. And I was like, oh, why are they doing that? And then all these homeless kids are going to be out on the streets now. So that was like the spark that ignited the fire in me. And then I was like, because I want to own my own nonprofit agency that helps LGBTQ youths, just provide them with all the service that they need to get out of the situation that they're in.
On that same point, though, I was wondering, Vaughn, if doing this story was a turning point for you, too, as a journalist. Did that change your outlook on your career?
Absolutely. Working on this piece and interviewing you, Leroy, had a profound impact on my career. Today, I am a producer at StoryCorps, where I am responsible for the Out Loud initiative, which records interviews with LGBTQ folks all over the country. And the path between reporting this piece and what I do today is super connected. I became very interested in following LGBTQ issues. In many ways, covering LGBTQ communities became my beat. Also, reporting on homelessness and reporting on LGBTQ folks takes a lot of research, and it also Right. takes a lot of community building. And so I found myself ultimately in community with not just activists, but service providers and all sorts of different individuals who were really interested in knowing about LGBTQ youth. And I'm on the advisory board of a nonprofit that does this sort of work. The news cycle is so fast. A lot of times journalists are expected to report things very quickly. You know, you talk to one person, you write a story, you put it up on the web. And I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with some very special people and to very slowly process what their mm-hmm. experiences were like and to do the best job that I could to step out of the story and let them shine. And I think right. that that process has really informed the kind of work I always want to do.
There have been so many changes in the LGBTQ community in the last couple of years. What challenges remain? And what do you think is better than when you first came to New York City?
I think when I came to New York, that was the first time they have like the gay marriage thing was passed. Mm-hmm. So finally we can get married in any state in the country. I feel like we still have like a very difficult task ahead with having service for LGBTQ youths who are coming out and they're getting kicked out of their house. And I feel like we need more intervention programs or family mm-hmm. reunification programs, more programs to help keep young people connected with their family and to build that education and understanding of what it means to be LGBTQ. And get the support that they need to then come out to their parents or stuff like that and not be kicked out or anything like that.
Do you feel like this is still happening because of cultural differences like it did with your family?
Yes, I do. Now there's so much media around LGBTQ mm-hmm. community and culture that it's hard to be like, oh, I'm going to kick my child out, but it's still happening among immigrant families.
What sorts of things do you think would have helped your situation? Because you talked about services for young people who are going through the same thing even today. So would those things have helped you at that time?
When I was in Green Community, there were a program with the family reunification, but that really didn't get off the ground. So I feel like if there were more like funding around that, that would have been helpful with me getting connected back to my family and dealing with the situation and not just shoving it under the rug. Well, in my family, that's a lot what we do. We like all get back together and we're laughing together, but we didn't deal with the situation that brought us apart. So
right.
that family reunification process would have been a great tool to have then.
And what are you doing now? Where are you living? What is your situation?
Right now I'm living in the Bronx in a studio apartment and I'm going to school in the social work program at Lehman College, and I'm just taking life one step at a time. I'm doing a lot of social justice work with Global Action Projects and other programs around the city.
And so you live in this apartment by yourself, right?
Yes.
It's a dream.
Yes.
You're paying rent and everything.
Yes. No more roommates.
Do you feel like you've come like a really long way?
Yes. In such a short time, I feel so proud of myself, and I I'm so thankful for all the support that I got throughout that whole process. And I still can go back to Green Chimneys and get support from the staff there. And I'm still connected with some of the young people that were there, and we're building long-term relationship that can last forever. So I'm excited. I've met new people. I got to meet Vaughn through Green Chimneys, so that was a great plus. So,
well, I'm incredibly proud of you, and
it's great.
So thrilled to see you doing so well. It's just awesome.
Leroy Grant and Vaughn Diaz, thank you so much for coming back here and reuniting and letting us share in that.
Thank you for having me. And I officially got my name changed to Adriel Grant.
Great.
But Leroy is my middle name now.
I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez, producer of this podcast, and our editor is Carolina Gonzalez. John Rudolph is the executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds. Special thanks to Rachel Stevens and Rachel Bongiorno. Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. Our supporters include the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Nicholas B. Ottaway Foundation, and listeners like you. Feet in Two Worlds is a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Visit our website at fi2w.org.